I was having dinner a couple weeks ago in Los Angeles, and the people I was having dinner with looked over and said, oh, by the way, that's Paul McCartney's public assistant. And I said, you got to be kidding me. They said, no, he's in town for the Grammys. And, he goes back and forth. He's in L.A. a lot. And they said, let me try to get him on the show. So we went up and talked to the guy, and they exchanged information. He then came over, and I told him about Coast to Coast. And he said, hey, Paul might be interested in this. So if that materializes, Gary, definitely I'll get you back on for that, because nobody knows the Paul McCartney story. The Walrus was Paul, like you.
Oh, it's going to be great. I mean, there's a lot of great urban myths and legends with the Beatles, so it would be great to do that. I'd love it.
Let's talk a little bit about The Walrus Was Paul. Great book that you wrote. It was our first introduction to you a long time ago on Coast to Coast. And let's just chat a little bit about it, because, you know, even though I still see the real Paul McCartney, there's a part of me, Gary, that goes, is it really him or not? Do you think that way, too?
Oh, when I wrote the book originally, I mean, I was really thinking, my goodness, I wonder what happened. I mean, just the clue from the Sgt. Pepper bass drum skin is what really just got my attention. Because you can't really say that it was just a bunch of people's imaginations running wild when you can see something that clear and that obvious. And when I saw that, I thought, you know, the Beatles had to have planted something. And then, you know, the way the thing ended, I mean, the only way I can remember to sort of make some sort of ending with it was that with the Manson murders in 69, that probably took a lot of the steam out of the clues, whether it was a great hoax or whether the whole thing happened. I mean, now knowing what I know and knowing the individuals I know, it would be hard for me to believe that it was an imposter. But it's, you know, to me, some of the great stories is just how much did the Beatles plan in this? How did they start? And I know they made millions of dollars on their album sales because the clues made everyone go out and buy CDs and albums again to look for them. So, I mean, it's still one of the greatest mysteries in rock history, and it may never be solved.
Let's go back a little bit, because in Detroit, a lot of this started where I was working at the time. Tell us the story, Gary.
Yeah, it was Russ Gibb. And Gibb had a Sunday afternoon radio show, and like you, George, callers called in. And one caller called in and said that I want to rap with you about McCartney being dead. And Russ Gibb said, well, what do you mean, McCartney being dead? And he says, well, play the end of Strawberry Fields Forever, and you'll hear John say, I buried Paul. So, you know, it's Sunday afternoon, so Gibb plays the record, and there appears to be a voice that says, I buried Paul. And that was fascinating. So then it said, play Revolution Number 9 backwards, and you hear a car crash, and you hear a voice scream, get me out, get me out. And you hear the voice that says, Number 9, you'll hear it reverse say, turn me on dead man. So he did that. And then other callers started coming. Yeah, have you heard this clue? So it started in Detroit, and then Roby Young in New York broadcast on WABC all through 40 states and created such a hysteria of the switchboard that the rumor goes he was fired. Now, Young says that, you know, he knew he was going to be let go in 2 weeks, but, you know, he just manned it, started doing all the clues, and he really felt that something was up. And in an interview I had with Roby Young, he was mentioning that someone from the Village Voice had gone to London and to attend the engagement session with Jane Asher and Paul McCartney.
Sure.
And he said while he was there, he spoke to one member of the Apple organization, and he said, you know, it's really strange that, you know, Paul seems to be spending a lot of time with Linda Eastman. And he says, oh, well, that's really not Paul. That's his double. And he said, you know, that was strange. And I mean, when Roby Young passed away, one of the last questions he had, he said, you know, I still think something was up there. So, you know, it's a great story, and we'll just have to see. But, I mean, no one else could have pulled off anything like this and that would sweep a country before the Internet through radio, and it's still so popular today.
Oh, it is. And if anything, Gary, it was a great marketing technique.
It was a brilliant marketing technique. I mean, it was incredible, the amount of the albums that sold. I mean, I'd heard that when Abbey Road was released, it really wasn't selling well. And then when the clues came in, the album jumped, started, and so did the other Beatles albums. They're all back on Billboard's Top 100. And the Beatles, Apple Record Company, you know, they started really bringing in money when they needed it. And what did Russ Gibb get out of it? Russ Gibb told me that what he got, the Beatles were angry with him at first, and then when all the sales come in, they gave him a gift. they gave him a complete collection of Beatle albums. So he said that's all he got out of it. But it's a funny story.
And if it was a concoction, who do you think came up with it? Someone like John Lennon? Do you think he would have done this?
Well, you know, some of this would be obviously John Lennon's wit, you know, especially with the plays.
Because he was that way, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of the literature that Lennon was into, James Joyce, and he was into Lewis Carroll, so you have some of the nonsensical phrases. And I know that when he did Glass Onion, when he said the line, "Here's another clue for you all, the walrus was Paul," I mean, "Here's another clue for you all" is a pretty blatant thing. And since the White Album came out in 1968, which means that the clues came out a year later, and here's Lennon a year before anyone knew about clues, saying here's another clue, suggesting there were more clues before that, it makes you wonder. And but, you know, the Beatles became very quiet with it. And I think maybe the Manson murders had something to do when, of course, the Beatle lyrics were sprawled in blood upon the wall. And,
right.
You know, and
right.
I think that it was a very bad public relations thing right now to say, well, yeah, we tried to make people think that, you know, Paul was dead. We put backwards stuff, but we didn't mean
so they just had to keep it quiet and let it go and die on its own.
Yeah, I think they did, George. And I think that some of the things that's interesting, though, is that they really didn't let it die. Because in How Do You Sleep, John says, "Those freaks was right when they said you was dead." So you have a reference there. In the song Back Off Boogaloo, Philip Norman says that Boogaloo was a code name the other three Beatles had for McCartney. And there's a line where Ringo says, "Wake up, meathead, don't forget that you were dead." And then there's the reference that McCartney makes in the backward track from The Simpsons, where he gives this recipe for lentil soup when he tells Lisa that if you play Maybe I'm Amazed backwards, there's a recipe for lentil soup. And when The Simpsons ended, you hear this mumbling with Maybe I'm Amazed, and you reverse it, and you hear Paul McCartney take the whole recipe of lentil soup, and at the very end he says, "Oh, by the way, I'm alive." So it seems like Paul still has a little fun with this.
Well, you know, you've got pictures in the book of the walrus was Paul,
mm-hmm.
and it is strange, you know, when you compare them. I mean, they do look like two different people.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of that has to do with distance from camera.
Could be.
But, you know, it's something that may never be completely justified to everyone's opinion, you know, that everyone will say, "Oh, you know, we understand or we agree with this." But it's kind of interesting that, you know, maybe some of the images or the distances has something to do, but it's just interesting. I mean, I think that it's one of the greatest all-time myths of all time, and I mean, in history.